You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're a great professional. Tell me you're going to get absolutely rotten tonight, like me.
Possibly.
Come on, John, go for it, lad. Enjoy yourself.
Cheers, Cara.
So, in a season of shocks in the Premier League, Liverpool have certainly suffered one or two themselves, and the Christmas and New Year stretch has felt pretty tough as a slog at times. It's the Red Agenda. I'm Steve Hothersall, and joining me to look at what's behind this, Simon Hughes and Kiva O'Neill, and we'll also catch up with James Pearce a little bit later on in the pod. Don't forget, right now you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special discounted price throughout January. Enjoy great analysis, in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts for less than £4 a month. Just head to theathletic.com/LiverpoolPod to sign up and enjoy The Athletic throughout 2021. That's theathletic.com/LiverpoolPod. Well, we've seen plenty of inconsistency from teams this season. United, Arsenal, Chelsea, and I suppose with Liverpool's recent results and performances, Simon, they'd have to be put in the same bracket now.
Yeah, it's been an incredible season in many ways. I mean, each of those teams that you've mentioned have gone through phases of, people saying you've got no chance, and then suddenly they all have a chance, I think, because of the way it's gone for a variety of different reasons. I mean, Liverpool against Southampton were, certainly for the first half, as bad as it gets, I would say, as bad as it's been under Jurgen Klopp. I think that, I've said it a few times on this podcast, that you can always tell from the first few minutes, I think, in any Liverpool performance under Jurgen Klopp, how it's going to be. And I did sense, even from the first few passes, it was a bit sloppy and not crisp, players not in the right positions, and hey-ho, within 2 minutes, they were 1-0 down. Absolutely brilliant finish by Danny Ings. Superb finish, but, you know, the defending was very poor. There is some sort of... there is some reason behind that. I think Trent Alexander-Arnold possibly thought that the other Southampton player that he was sort of had an eye on was going to get a nick on the ball, but clearly didn't. But he obviously misjudged what was happening and gave the opportunity. So it sort of set them off on exactly the wrong foot. And then from there, certainly the first half just didn't get going. I know Liverpool dominated the second half and sort of created a few chances. But yeah, I think Jurgen Klopp sort of got at it in the press conference afterwards. The final pass was just not good enough, you know, for players of that calibre. Didn't really give the players who were running onto the ball to try and meet it and get a shot off, didn't give them a chance. So really, really poor performance after, you know, two equally poor performances, I would say. But, you know, they are still top of the league, and I've always thought this season being quite a unique season in terms of everything that's going on, not just in football but around the world. I've always thought if Liverpool can get to the end of January in a really decent position in touching distance of the top place, I'd still fancy them, you know, when it comes to it. But there's a lot to digest, really. There's a lot of reasons why this has happened. I'm sure we'll get into it over the course of this conversation.
Draws feel desperately disappointing, don't they, Kiva? So West Brom, Newcastle, they were ones that made you feel a bit glum. But it feels like a crisis when Liverpool lose now. What does that say?
I think it says social media is crazy, isn't it? We should all keep away from it. But no, obviously things are going to be overhyped when the champions lose a game. And obviously it just always feels like a big sort of feather in the cap of any team, doesn't it? But, you know, for all Liverpool were bad, Southampton were excellent at just keeping them out, wasn't they? Pressing them from the very front. And, you know, that's how we see Liverpool beat teams. But just wasn't to be last night. It was painful to watch out of all those games. You know, all the points dropped this season. Brighton, Fulham, West Brom, Newcastle. you know, they were painful to watch. You know, but obviously what kept us going for after the Newcastle game was Thiago's 17-minute spell, wasn't it? Which we were all just, you know, absolutely dazzled by. And then he gets that early yellow card and I don't think he ever really recovers. You know, he's the type of player he is, he's sort of like always going to be on the cusp of fouling another player. He's just always in those little gaps and, you know, in tight spaces with the ball. So I think that sort of, you know, stopped him. You could see Andre Maddon at one point sort of say, you know, be careful. I thought refereeing was absolutely terrible, by the way. I hardly bring referees down, but I thought the officiating was just really quite dull. I don't know whether VAR look at things anymore, or I don't know. It seems to be the past few Liverpool games, I can't remember the last time VAR was on the screen. And I think that's probably the case for a lot of people watching on, just thinking, where is VAR? You know, if it's doing its job, great, but there've been a lot of times when, you know, you do question sort of. I think there was a foul on Mane, wasn't there, in the box, and you know, there wasn't a lot in it, but then when you see in the likes of obviously Pogba get that penalty that he won for United, you do kind of call it into question a little bit. But I think that's all getting away from, you know, Liverpool's performance as a team, and they just weren't good enough, and they haven't been good enough for a while. And you know, the latter half of last season when football returned, they probably weren't good enough. You know, but we put that down to, you know, they've won the league, it's a hangover, you know, they'll get through it. And then obviously they put in performances like they have against obviously Chelsea, Leicester, Wolves, then obviously Crystal Palace. But then in there's still those Aston Villa games to worry about, and obviously the drop points that I've mentioned. So it is just a frustrating time for Liverpool. But I mean, if any team can come through this, it's got to be them, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's an inconsistency, isn't it? But is it understandable? Si, you talked about those passes that weren't happening, and Jurgen Klopp alluded to that in his press conference afterwards. 3 hours without a goal. Now, this is the team that scored 7 against Crystal Palace. And I think most concerning for Liverpool fans is that lack of attacking threat. But also, it's one that makes you scratch your head when you look at Liverpool's front three.
Well, I think it's a reminder as well that I know, obviously in football, we do focus a lot on the individual talents and, you know, the great moments that Salah, Firmino and Mane have produced. But I think it's a reminder as well that this, the strength of this Liverpool team in the main is the structure of the team and the fluidity. And when it works, it's absolutely brilliant to watch. But when it doesn't work, they've obviously looked pretty blunt over the last few weeks. And I just think it's down to the fact that, I mean, Andy Robertson, I thought, did look a bit tired last night. He got into some great positions, but couldn't seem to find a man with any of his crosses or infield passes. And then obviously, I mean, Trent's form hasn't been as anywhere near as what it was in the previous two seasons. And he looks tired, a bit shot of confidence as well, and not providing that outlet in the wide areas. So the threats that come from other areas of the field isn't opening up the space for the three forwards, who equally, you know, I think they look a bit tired as well, not as lively. Since Salah did the interview with the AS newspaper and spoke, he hasn't done much, has he? Apart from, obviously, I know he scored the two goals against Crystal Palace, but he hasn't played particularly well the last three games, I think. Mane was snatching a bit last night, and Firmino tried but couldn't seem to find the space because he was crowded out. I mean, I think you've got to give credit to Southampton for the way they set up the defence. But yeah, I think there's a lot of different reasons why, but I just think that fundamentally at the moment, that a lot of tired players there, and the usual threats that create the space for the forward players isn't there. So it means that they're not being able to create the number of chances that they normally would.
What you're alluding to there is you're saying too many key players out of form at the same time. And when you look at Trent, and there was that stat that they gave out on the TV last night, gave the ball away 38 times. Hugely wasteful, and something we wouldn't associate with him.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to go back and check through the stats in terms of, you know, the number of passes he actually connected with as well, and sort of the number of times he got high up the pitch. He did seem to be high up the pitch. So it just shows that, you know, that he's trying to do the things that would create for Liverpool, but obviously that's not connecting in that way at the moment. So it is a problem, and I think it's something that Klopp needs to look at. I mean, it's the first time he, you know, it happens to every player when the sort of Steven Gerrard and Jamie Carragher speak about the same things. You know, pretty much everything's gone right for him over the last sort of two or three seasons, really. This is the first rocky patch that Liverpool have hit collectively, you know, at the same time. I think players have had iffy games, one or two games, but this is the first period since 2016-17 where you're questioning Liverpool a little bit about the way things are. And it's for Jurgen Klopp to reinstill that confidence in the players as well and make them feel good about themselves again, because I just got the impression, I hate that term body language, but you could see it with Trent. He seemed to be beating himself up a little bit last night, I thought, with the way it was going. So and again, you know, mention Andy Robertson. I mean, he's been absolutely superb for Liverpool this season. I think if you were to give a player the season award now, it would probably be him. He's been very consistent. But last night, it did seem to me that the games had sort of caught up with him. Because when you're tired, you don't make the right decisions all the time. And I mean, I haven't even mentioned the midfield, have I? I mean, Kiva touched on it there, I think. You know, you could tell Thiago seemed off it. I think Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain played like he hadn't played any games. So to select those two players at the same time was a bit of a surprise for me. But Jurgen Klopp might say that he had no other option. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think, Kiva, you could tell from the very first whistle that the midfield wasn't working. Oxlade-Chamberlain finding it difficult. Thiago has obviously got the touch, but he's clearly not match fit yet, is he?
No, and obviously, you know, we know he's a world-class player. He's probably above that. But I just think it didn't work with Henderson in defence, did it? And obviously, you know, when looking back on the goal, it looked like Henderson, everyone was holding a high line, and then Henderson was just a little step out and didn't quite know, you know, those first opening minutes. And obviously that's what cost Liverpool. And then obviously Sky's footage after sort of shows him calling Wijnaldum towards him, and that's what gives Danny Ings the space he gets to run into. And obviously Trent makes that mistake, and his performance never really recovers, does it, from there? You know, if Henderson's in midfield, he's controlling the game in the same way he did, but it's just a few yards higher up the pitch, but being asked to do it, you know, a little bit further back. You know, we know Liverpool hold a high line anyway, but that high line is still relatively low for Henderson to be there, you know, trying to run the game. And it felt like a little bit sometimes it was like, oh, we'll just give the ball to Thiago and see what happens. And, you know, I mean, gone are those days at Liverpool, so I really wouldn't like to see a return of is a really world-class player like Coutinho. Let's just give him the ball and hope that he sort of figures it out for us, because we've got no other ideas here. I just felt like Liverpool was stifled so well by the Southampton press, and, you know, Hasenhüttl and Southampton done a really good job of just pegging back sort of Robertson and Alexander-Arnold, because that's where Liverpool's main threats come from, and it's down those wings. And I think, you know, Robertson had a lot more joy going forward, but then, you know, it was just really coming to nothing, was it? As we've sort of alluded to here. But I just think Henderson playing in that centre-back role is sort of maybe a little bit questionable now looking back. Maybe one of the young lads, Reece Williams or Nat Phillips, could have coped more readily, maybe. You know, it wasn't like Southampton were attacking constantly, but obviously I think you really missed sort of Henderson in midfield to sort of add to that. I thought maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain probably should have been, I mean, it would have been mad for Jurgen Klopp to make, everything he does will make headlines, so it would have been mad for him to sort of bring off Oxlade-Chamberlain and Alexander-Arnold after the first half. But you know, it probably would have changed the game, because there were two players who weren't really in it in the first half and struggled to sort of get in it in the second. Sort of similar to the Aston Villa game, which it'd be unfair to sort of pick on Joe Gomez, but he had a torrid first half, and, you know, everyone did. But, you know, I think sometimes Jurgen is sort of hesitant to make those early changes. And I think, you know, sometimes you've just got to say, right, we're making a double change here. And I think, you know, maybe with, you know, if the five subs rule had got over the line, you know, maybe that would have happened.
On Henderson's position, Si, I don't know whether you saw Jürgen's interview before the game. He was asked about Henderson playing centre-half, and his answer was he hasn't played the position very often, but he's played a few yards ahead of the defence. It was a sort of frustrated justification of why he was... I don't think he even believed it himself. But, you know, Man City did this last season, didn't they? They moved their best central midfielder in Fernandinho into defence, and it just creates another problem.
Well... I think defensively, you know, he did okay, Jordan Henderson. But it's what you miss in the middle of the park.
Yes,
is where the problem is really. I mean, the same with Fabinho. I think Liverpool have missed him in the middle of the midfield this season. When the discussion about Virgil van Dijk starts about being a major loss, of course he's going to be a major loss. He's one of the, if not the best defenders in the world. So any team would miss him. But then to sort of compound it, you then obviously move him, one of your best midfielders or two of your best midfielders, two world-class midfielders, into unfamiliar positions. So then the structure of the team changes dramatically, and it means that further up the pitch you can't do the level of rotation that you would want to do. And equally, you know, since Liverpool, I can't remember the stat, but... they were saying, you know, about the number of centre-half partnerships that have been. I mean, it particularly over the last couple of months, it's been chopping and changing every, more or less every game, it feels like, anyway. So,
I've got the stat on that. It's the 10th different centre-back partnership in 17 Premier League games. 10 different ones so far.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as much as Liverpool dominate the ball and usually are on top of the opposition, I still think in terms of a structural and organisational sort of position, it's difficult to build when you've got such unfamiliar players playing together. I mean, a lot of the teams, what they have tried, which is, let's face it, this is what Southampton did, really. They knocked the ball over the top from a free kick and scored from it. So we've seen it in a couple of games. Fabinho has done very, very well as a centre-half. I think he's been fantastic, but he's still... not a natural centre-half, which means that sometimes he's stepping forward, sometimes the other player isn't stepping forward. That's a sign of the communication and the understanding between two players not being there. And that's what happens when you change the team a lot. And now, he's been forced to do that to some extent because, I mean, okay, you could have probably predicted that Joel Matip would get injured, and you may have been able to predict that Joe Gomez would get injured, but not the level of injury that Joe Gomez has got. I know he's had some serious injuries, but that is incredibly bad luck what's happened to him. So, and equally anyway, you know, he's only, if Liverpool were going to be able to go into the transfer market, it would only be now that he'd be able to rectify that. So what's gone before doesn't really come into this conversation. He's been forced into doing that. I mean, I know we might want to talk a bit later about, like, sort of why Liverpool should go into the transfer market or why they might not. But I just think that when you're chopping and changing so often, it is going to have an impact on the team, even if you're not under a barrage of the opposition trying to, you know, put you under loads of pressure. I just think in the very small moments when, you know, you need two centre-halves or at least one experienced centre-half to know exactly what is going on, you might come unstuck, and it's happened a few times, I think, for Liverpool. I think the goals that they conceded against Southampton and West Brom have been sort of a sign of that, really. So, yeah, I mean, if Liverpool get through the season, if Liverpool do somehow win the league with everything that's happened, it would be pretty incredible, really. The only reason why I think it might still happen is because of sort of how crazy the season is and how the other teams are facing similar situations in terms of injuries and unavailability and everything else. I think that it's still wide open. I think Liverpool still got the quality to do it, but they have to rediscover the confidence and some level of fluidity in the attacking areas if they're going to be able to do it.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It's the Red Agenda. I'm Steve Hother. So we have Simon Hughes, Kiva O'Neill. We'll talk with James Pearce a little bit later on the pod. We're trying to make some sense of Liverpool's current form. Kiva, does the team look unbalanced?
I think it's always going to look unbalanced, isn't it? Without, I think, what Simon's talking about there, Van Dijk and Gomez in defence, and just not having that sort of normal midfield sort of conundrum, which is, you know, Liverpool have a lot of great midfielders. Who do we play there? But now, you know, the question is what midfield is playing defence, which is not really a question any of us thought we'd be asking or, you know, forced to answer this year. I think maybe up top without Diogo Jota now, just that he just seemed to add a spark, what Liverpool absolutely needed, didn't he? Obviously losing Van Dijk so early in the season and then Gomez, that was such a big blow defensively. But still, Liverpool have put in performances, you know, that have been defensively astute. But I think, you know, now it's sort of, you know, we mentioned when we lost both those players to injury that Liverpool would have to outscore teams. And it does kind of still feel like that in a way, as much as Liverpool's defence has been actually quite all right. And I think Jota had added a lot of those goals and a lot of that sort of new energy. I don't know, it's become a little bit stagnant, hasn't it, of late? Obviously, we had that sort of anomaly of a Crystal Palace game where sort of, I think there was 8 shots on target and 7 of them found the back of the net. You know, they were all superb finishes. But since then, I think, you know, Liverpool have looked a little bit sort of off it, haven't they, up front? And I feel like, you know, we do have to sort of, as much as we talk about the injury list, we do have to mention Jota and what a massive improvement he made to this Liverpool attack. He added something that we didn't really know was missing, but we needed, you know. And I just think without him, and I'm not really sure when he is back, to be honest, but it just seems to be, there's sort of no one on the bench that you would think that's sort of going to come on and change the game. Shaqiri had a bit of a go, didn't he? But, you know, he's coming out from the cold, and James Milner on his 35th birthday couldn't sort of wrestle past the defence enough, could he? I thought he struggled when he came on. And then Divock Origi, you know, I think that was quite a telltale sign of him not being brought on by Jürgen. And then obviously Minamino as well, as someone who's, you know, had a really good game against Palace and now is being overlooked. So I think when you talk about the balance of the team, I think we have to sort of look at that attack. And, you know, for so long it's been one of the best in the world, but right now it's not sort of kicking into gear, is it? And I think a lot of that comes from, you know, having to play the likes of Jordan Henderson in midfield, which we will go on about, but is a massive thing. You know, Simon said he did well, but not having him, you know, 20, 10 yards even up the pitch is just detrimental to how Liverpool play. And then, you know, as well, Fabinho, we will sort of, you know, you think about what a job he's done for Liverpool. And like, he's sort of the only reason why you think Liverpool would be capable of sort of reclaiming the title if he sort of sticks around in defence, because he's just been, you know, like taken to it like a duck to water, hasn't he? But you are missing one of the world's best defensive midfielders then. And, you know, we know we've got Thiago now, but it sort of doesn't give him the license to go forward. He's being asked to do sort of a job that he probably didn't think he would have to do in a way. You know, we know he can do it all, but we want him to be that sort of weaving those passes that you don't see. And I thought he did a lot of that last night and it was enjoyable to watch at times, but then he gave the ball away a lot, but then they all did. So it just kind of, sometimes it's balanced on the pitch, but I think this is sort of a bit of a mentality one and Liverpool need to shift it and fast.
Yeah, a few different problems to sort out. I think the Jota one's interesting. He, you know, when he arrived, Si, of course, everyone's saying, oh, where's he going to play? But of course, gives them that additional top quality attacking option so Jürgen can rotate the squad without the quality dipping. And you're really missing him now.
Well, definitely. I mean, when he missed the, when he got injured after the Michelin game, I mean, Jürgen still hasn't really explained why he plays him in that game. I'm very puzzling, really. I think it's obviously going to be a decision he must surely regret now, playing him in a game of no sporting value anyway. I agree. I think Liverpool have missed him, and it's obviously not allowed them to freshen up quite as much as they would have wanted. But as Kiva said there, I mean, Minamino I thought was really good against Palace and played off the left of the attack in that game. And because Liverpool won 7-0, I think it sort of got forgotten a little bit. Obviously, his first goal set Liverpool on the way that day. And I find it very puzzling that he hasn't played a single minute in any of the three games, particularly when the manager has complained about sort of scheduling, and he's gone to play a difficult team away from home and won and played a significant role in that game. I find it a bit confusing, really. It seems that, you know, all the confidence has pretty much been lost in Divock Origi as well. He's not getting in. So, you know, a lot is going to be expected of the front three at the moment. I mean, I still think, as I said before, I think a lot of it really is down to, as much as we laud the front three as being brilliant players, they still rely on other players playing their role and doing what they can do. And at the moment, that's clearly not happening from other areas. That they haven't got the consistency in midfield in terms of, I know Liverpool have rotated a lot, but I think in the past, and that's worked for them. But I still think, when I say consistency, they've got two players coming in who haven't played any football really in the last 2, 3, 4, 5 months. That's going to have an effect on the game. You've got your fullbacks, you aren't quite on it. That has an impact on their performances as well. So yeah, it's something to really think about. I mean, the only one, I mean, I thought last night again, Wijnaldum, I thought for my money, was excellent again. And he's the one who looks like he's going to leave. So, I mean, it's a bit of a tricky time. Yeah, he still hasn't signed a contract. I know he's spoken about, you know, it seems like there's an impasse between his expectations and what the club are willing to give, judging by his comments to the in the media last week. So, plenty to ponder. It seems
a very pleasant impasse at the moment, though, Si. Everyone's been nice both sides.
It is. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, in the past when players have left Liverpool, Emre Can and Philip Coutinho, it certainly hasn't been on the worst terms. I mean, I do think that Coutinho's sort of life in Liverpool and his influence inside the dressing room wasn't as rosy as it was made out to be, certainly in that summer where he was agitating to leave. But to be fair to him, he did find a way to get his head down and perform well after that, as did Emre Can. And you know, Wijnaldum's performances, I would say, this season have been, you know, as close as anybody to certainly to Andy Robertson, if not equal to. I just think he's been outstanding and all the way through, reliable, never let you down. I mean, I can understand, we've had this conversation before, so I don't want to repeat myself, but I would think that it'd be a big loss to Liverpool if he were to leave, because he's a significant character inside the dressing room, great player, takes responsibility. I really like him. I think he's a top player. So any club that goes and signs him is going to be getting a bargain there, I would say. Emre Can was a bit of a divisive figure, and I never thought that he was quite as good as some people, or as influential anyway as some people made out. I'd say that Wijnaldum's has had far greater influence on this Liverpool team than he ever had, and would be a bigger loss to the club than he was when he departed.
Right, let's slightly get back to the Southampton game. I know we're all sort of keen watchers of Monday Night Football, and interesting to see what Jamie Carragher said afterwards. And he picked out something about the confidence, and he talked about the last 10 minutes of the game, Kiva, and he was basically saying that last season, I think we'd have all believed that something might have been created, that they'd find that way, that teams of that level have that way of making the breakthrough, but he sort of feels that just isn't there. The confidence doesn't exist in themselves at the moment.
No, it doesn't, and it's, you know, it's weird that it doesn't exist, because Firmino scored too late to win against Spurs, and it felt like that was the sort of late goal Liverpool needed. And they have scored over late goals this season, obviously against Leeds. And, you know, there have been late moments there for them when they've, you know, salvaged things from the death. But I just feel like it's, I don't know, the past few games, particularly like West Brom, I think quite early on you knew how that game was going to go, even though Liverpool took the lead. You know, they weren't putting away chances and you kind of thought, you know, this is going to come and cost them in the second half. And, you know, lo and behold, it did. And the same for Newcastle. I mean, that game, it was sort of almost written in the stars that it'd be a goalless draw. Like, you could feel it. And I don't know if that's sort of the energy that the players are giving off on the pitch. You can feel a bad result sometimes with Liverpool. And a lot of those times when you have felt a bad result, you know, we talk a lot about that Aston Villa game last season, but you did feel a bad result there, but you always believed, you know what, these lads, you know, they do go to the end. And, you know, they obviously scored two late goals to win that. But I don't know, it's sort of lacking from them this season in a way. And I think that's probably one of the most worrying things is the, you know, Southampton scored in the second minute. I think it was Danny Ings' earliest goal he's ever scored in his career, or at least the Premier League. And, you know, Liverpool were unable to find the other time to break Southampton down and score a goal. You know, it took till the 75th minute for Liverpool to register a shot on target, which is just, I mean, that's not acceptable, is it, for a team of this calibre? And I just think, you know, the struggling of late, but I think that last 10 minutes, I mean, I switched off, to be honest, after that, because I watched it and I just thought, do you know what I need after? Because, you know, obviously with the news of a new national lockdown, and I think everything just sort of getting to everyone. So I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to watch a rom-com. So I put Forgetting Sarah Marshall on, which I haven't seen in about 10 years.
Is that Russell Brand?
About that
great
game.
Film.
It was, yeah, it was funny. Yeah. I laughed and sort of had a couple of beers and forgot about it and then, you know, slept it off. But, you know, I think that 10 minutes does compound sort of the misery, doesn't it? I think, you know, Southampton were unlucky to probably, they could have scored a couple of times. Liverpool were like me playing FIFA. It was like I was playing FIFA for a lot of the game. You know, when you just sort of, like, lunging in to get the ball and not really getting it, and there's some like 12-year-old kid who's just like holding off on a 1-0 lead. It felt like that kind of, you know, like that, like, anger it gives you, which is why I don't play FIFA. Not that Southampton are a 12-year-old kid, but, you know, they were a great team and they are a great team. You know, this is a team as well, which we sort of forget. We're here to talk about Liverpool, but, you know, they got beat 9-0 last season by Leicester, and I think Hasenhüttl's tears are probably thinking, you know, this is where I've brought them now, to be such an incredible team in Liverpool. But, you know, just quickly go back to that final 10 minutes of the game. It just felt like Liverpool were never going to do anything. And then in that last 10 minutes, it was like they were definitely not going to do anything. And I think, you know, those short corners, what are they about? Like, that is just ridiculous. It's like, just fire it in. Like, Alisson had already come up for the one before, so why would you take it short? That's happened twice now. It happened against West Brom, and it's just, I mean, that's, like, just really, really poor. Like, do they think that they've got more time than they have? I honestly don't understand that. I think that is just sort of a telltale sign of where this Liverpool team are at the minute.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
It's the Red Agenda. I'm Steve Hothersall. Simon Hughes, Kiva O'Neill on the pod. Let's talk title challenges.
Can we talk rom-coms instead, Steve?
Well, I was going to ask you what your favourite one was. I'd throw Notting Hill in there.
Oh, wow. I haven't really watched that many, to be honest.
About Time's brilliant.
Yeah.
The Holiday.
To me at the end of the show.
A classic. Yeah.
Eat, right. Pray, Love. There you go. I watched that over Christmas.
You're not a rom-com man, are you? how real does that title threat from Manchester feel? Is it both United and City, Si, now?
I mean, the City is more believable for obvious reasons because they've been there before and they've done it. I mean, I know Manchester United have as a club, but they haven't with this group of players or this manager. So, I mean,
their fixture list looks good as well, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I think Man City were very good at Chelsea. They seem to have that bit between the teeth again, a bit of swagger about them, and defensively, you know, they've been a lot better this season. I think quite surprising, really. You know, for a few seasons, John Stones has sort of been in and out the team. I think he's playing with a lot of confidence again. It's a reminder. I think football so much is down to confidence, isn't it? Even really good players suffer from confidence issues, and he seems to me to be really confident, really dominant at the moment. And that is helped by obviously the player that they've signed from Portugal, Diaz. I think he's been a really good signing for them. So they look better without Kyle Walker in the team as well. They look less likely to make mistakes, I think, at the back. And then going forward, they've, I mean, I know it's quite highly documented about Sergio Aguero not really scoring many goals, but I mean, I would think I'd be majorly surprised if that run went on much longer, just because he's such a brilliant player. And if he does start scoring goals for City in the next couple of weeks heading into the end of the season, that's going to give them a massive boost. So I think City definitely, I mean, I know we discussed a few months ago about whether City were in or out of this title race at the time, and I thought that they were, and my view hasn't changed on that. Man United, I think, sounds a bit like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer there, didn't it, the way I said think, but the thing that makes me doubt Man United is the defensively. I just think that they are a bit vulnerable. Going forward, they're very, very good to watch, and I think with the pace that they've got, they can really trouble most teams. But as I said, I just think that they don't have that they don't have many players, as far as I'm aware, I think, to have taken a team of United standing to the level that they need to be at to win the league. And I just think it's a bit premature at the moment to say that they're definitely, you know, going to win the league because of the run that they've been on. They've been on ups and downs, and I'm sure there'll be more ups and downs as the season progresses because of the way things are. And I think whoever manages that better will be the ones who end up winning at the end.
It's remarkable how this Premier League season's unfolded. In terms of Man City and what might be the case with the table in a month's time, Kiever, in the next six games, they've got three home games on the bounce and they play four of the bottom five. Yeah, significant period for Pep Guardiola. Do you expect in a month, month and a half, that City are top of the table?
I think when you look at those games, you would think so. But, I mean, it's been such a weird league, hasn't it? League season this year. I just think, I mean, you know, I think a lot of people sleeping on City, weren't they? Like, I always knew, I think I said not long ago on this podcast, that, you know, I think everyone was talking about different teams at different times, whether it be Everton, Chelsea, you know, whoever, Tottenham for that period before we beat them. And it just felt like City weren't sort of in the conversation, which was a bit weird because they had those games in hand and, you know, everyone was kind of, you know, I think the loss against Leicester they had, and, you know, a couple of other drop points. I think they dropped points to West Brom as well. And, you know, I think people were thinking that maybe City were sort of just in that kind of rut they were in last season that they didn't quite get out of. But I never really felt that. I always felt like, you know, the Pep Guardiola to get things together. I mean, he's not long signed a new contract, which I think sort of closed down those sort of exit rumours, didn't he? And I think that's probably helped the team a bit. I think they're in a massively better position than a lot of people think that they were in. Obviously now, you know, the table says that, but I think you mentioned there they've got to play Brighton, Crystal Palace, you know, teams that you would expect the City team in the form they showed against Chelsea to just absolutely run away with those games, especially with them being at home. That just gives you a little bit of an edge. Or, I mean, does it now? COVID times, I'm not even sure. But, you know, they're in a really good place, aren't they? I think Liverpool have got a massive test against Man United, which I think, you know, that game a lot will sort of hinge on that, I think, just in terms of it feels like the Tottenham game all over again. The, you know, Liverpool need to win it to sort of just, you know, propel themselves back up the table. But I think winning that kind of sends out a message that, you know, they are a better team than United. I know it's a simple message, but one that just will, you know, put Liverpool up the table and sort of maybe stop United's, well, what they'd probably call a little bit of a title charge, I guess, which it feels weird saying about that team, but, you know, they are putting a run of results together. And we know City of old, don't we? And, you know, the last few seasons, usually apart from last season, they've been able to put a phenomenal second half of the season in, which, you know, cost Liverpool the title, didn't it? And in 2019, I think, you know, the run of games they put in, it was just winning, winning, winning. And, you know, Liverpool kind of need to do that now, because I know for a fact Man City are going to do it. I mean, you don't even have to, I probably won't be watching their games. You'll just know that they're going to win them. So, you know, I think it's going to be interesting when those sides meet in, I think, is it February?
What a season. What a couple of months we've got ahead. We're going to catch up with James Pearce in just a moment. He knows how to pick an away game. He's on his way back from Southampton. Just before we get to him, Si, do Liverpool's title ambitions hinge on bringing in a centre-half? That seems to be a conversation which Jamie Carragher started a few weeks ago. Everyone seems to be saying it now. Is it a simple matter of that? If you don't sign someone, you're not going to win the title.
I think they're going to find it very hard to win the title with two midfielders in defence for how long that lasts, I don't know. I mean, I like Joel Matip as a player. I think he's a really good player, but in terms of his injury records, you can't trust him. Obviously, Joe Gomez is out for the rest of the season. Virgil van Dijk, I don't think he'll play again. I mean, for Liverpool to win the league without those players, I think would be an incredible achievement. I mean, my concern is nobody's spoken about it, and I'm, you know, I don't want to sound alarmist, but they need to get in the Champions League as well. I mean, we talk about revenues being one of the reasons why Liverpool can't go out and sign players, because, as we discussed many times, Liverpool exists in a real economic world, so that it's all balances and checks and making sure they've got the right amount of money to spend on players. But if they were to slip out of the Champions League places, bear in mind the way the season's gone so far, it's so close and tightly packed up there, it's a big risk. You know, they're really obviously backing Jurgen Klopp to get them through, and why wouldn't you back? They've just won the league. But football's a funny game, and I just think that in the past, I've spoken a lot about the small margins of why City fell away the season before. They didn't have Vincent Kompany, you know, the player that probably won them the league when they instead of Liverpool the season before last. Liverpool are now missing the best defender in the world, arguably, accompanied by, you know, his two teammates who've done really, really well when they've played, by and large, over the last 2 to 3 years. So I can't see how. I think it's going to be very hard for them to win it without getting an adequate replacement in. But I can also understand why it's probably going to be very difficult for them to do that at the moment. So they're in a difficult position. It's a big test of Klopp's management and how he deals with this tactically, in terms of the confidence, the fitness, everything else. It's a massive test. I don't think he'll have faced something like this in his career yet.
Right, it's the Red Agenda, and James Pearce from The Athletic was at St Mary's. A long trip. He's on his way home with plenty to think about. How are you, James?
Hi, Steve. Yeah, trying to put a brave face on a grim and very cold night on the south coast.
Wasn't it just? I suppose one of the big conversations is centred around Liverpool's defence, and given that the transfer window is open, this notion that Liverpool can only win the title if they buy a centre-half. Now, Jordan Henderson playing centre-half didn't do badly, of course, in that position, but it takes away something from the team when he's moved from midfield. What's your thoughts after watching that on where Liverpool are going over the next couple of months?
Yeah, well, I think that defeat threw up a number of issues that Jurgen Klopp is wrestling with at the moment. I think it's probably too simplistic to say, you know, Liverpool must sign a centre half. You know that is going to be the difference between winning and not winning the league, because when you watch a game like last night, there are issues at the other end of the pitch, attacking wise. You know, there's the balance of the midfield, you know, isn't working as well either at the moment. There's a lot of problems that Klopp has to try and find solutions to. But I've said for quite a while that I felt Liverpool had to go and strengthen in January, that they needed a centre back last summer. In all honesty, you know, not replacing Day and Lovren was, you know, I think we said back then, was a gamble. And of course, no one could have predicted they'd suffer, you know, such devastating setbacks to Van Dijk and Gomez, and obviously Matip's had his issues as well. But it would certainly, you know, lift, I think, not just the fans, I think, but also the squad as well, if a new face could come in. And it's not just what that addition to the back line would do defensively, because, you know, when you look at the numbers, I think Liverpool have only conceded 8 in 12 Premier League games since they lost Van Dijk. So it's not like, you know, they're suddenly vulnerable defensively. Mm. And as you said, Henderson and Fabinho can play centre-back. You know, Fabinho has proved it over an extended period, but it's the knock-on effect of those players having to play out of position is that Liverpool aren't as strong in midfield. They don't have the best holding midfielder in the Premier League anymore because he's playing centre-back. They don't have that dynamic leader who, you know, his energy gets Liverpool going when Jordan Henderson is playing centre back. So that's the bigger knock on effect for me. And I think also, you know, Nat Phillips and Reece Williams have done brilliantly at times when they've come in on one off occasions. But it's such a huge ask to expect one of them to deliver consistently at a stage of the season when the stakes are so high.
The word from the club is still pretty much that there's no intent on buying anyone. Is that a smokescreen, or is that the reality?
No, I don't think it's a smokescreen. I think, you know, from the people I've spoken to, it was unlikely there would be additions made to the squad in the January window. I think there's a number of reasons for that. I think we all know that January isn't the perfect time in terms of availability. Clubs in general aren't particularly willing to part company with their prize assets in the winter window. And of course, if they do, you're paying a premium. And we all know, you know, people probably don't get sick of hearing it, but the ongoing financial impact of the pandemic, even to a club the size of Liverpool, is absolutely huge. You're talking about, you know, more than £100 million drop in revenues over the course of the last 12 months. And, you know, especially, you know, with the new lockdown restrictions, you know, it's showing no signs of easing up, is it? So, you know, there are a number of factors there. And I think also, you know, you only have to look at the way that FSG and Klopp and Edwards have operated, is they very rarely go in for short-term fixes. You know, I think from what I've been told, Liverpool are only interested in making a defensive signing this month if, you know, firstly, obviously, if the price is right, And secondly, if it's a player that they believe can fit in for the longer term. So not someone who can just do a job until Van Dijk and Gomez are back, but someone who will actually enhance and complement what they've got for seasons to come. I think the feeling is that it's going to be easier to get someone like that in the summer. But of course, quite rightly, fans are worried about the here and now. Not recruiting in January could end up proving very costly in terms of the Premier League and the battle for Champions League glory this season.
And inevitably, the price is never right, is it? The names they've been linked with: Upamecano, Kabak, Bremer, Botman, Carmo. None of these have got any solid connection to them.
Certainly Botman, I think we can rule out. I think there was, you know, a lot of speculation around him over the weekend, and, you know, you speak to people and check out rumours, and, you know, the people I spoke to were absolutely adamant that there was zero interest in Botman. And I know some people will say, oh, you know, it's a smokescreen, Liverpool, you know, they're just wanting to do things under the radar. Well, that's not, I don't quite go along with that, because, you know, people reference what happened with Thiago, but with Thiago, it was never, ever, you know, it was never, ever, this is an impossible one, you know, completely out of the question. It was always, it was unlikely because of the finance and because of Liverpool being so well stocked in midfield. And, you know, as it turned out, they managed to get Thiago at a, you know, at an amazing price, with a price structure that worked, having initially expected Wijnaldum to leave. So that was a completely different situation. And, you know, certainly our reporting around that time was that Thiago was always a possibility. Well, while with Botman, we're being told it's just not a possibility. You know, certainly there's, you know, Upamecano, of course, is someone on Liverpool's radar, but, you know, it's almost impossible to get him out of Leipzig this month with, you know, the fact that the clubs are preparing to meet each other in the Champions League. Kabak, of course, at Schalke, you know, he's another one who has been looked at. But, you know, I don't think it's gone any further than that. Ben White at Brighton, you know, he's certainly got his admirers at Liverpool. But, you know, again, what you're talking about, Leeds had, what, £30 million bid rejected for him last summer. So you're probably talking 40, 45 million just to get Brighton to talk. And, you know, with the battle they're in for Premier League survival, you know, they're not going to be wanting to lose one of their best players. So, no, lots of names being bandied around. And I think, you know, Botman is probably an example of Liverpool's name being used to kind of put, you know, trying to create a market for a player and create interest and drive the price up. So I'm sure we're going to see plenty more centre-backs around Europe linked with Liverpool. But as things stand at the moment, you know, I'm not aware of anything being close to a deal getting done. You know, whether recent results with just 2 points out of nine, whether that does provoke, you know, Klopp and Edwards and FSG into a change of heart, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, I think the last few years have shown us that they do tend to ignore the noise from outside the club and stick to their stance and very rarely make knee-jerk reactions. And, you know, they've known for a long time, obviously, with Van Dijk and Gomez's injuries, that they were short in the centre-half department. So, you know, I think the fact they didn't have anyone lined up immediately to come in at the start of January was pretty telling. You know, Joel Matip should be back. I think the hope is that he will be fit for the Man United game. Which of course is you know, looming large on the horizon, but and I don't think anyone would argue, would they, with the caliber of a Fabinho and Matip combination. But you know, of course, the huge worry with Matip between now and the middle of May is, you know, how many more games will he miss due to injury, because his fitness record is so checkered.
That United game feels massive, doesn't it? They've got the Villa game before it in the FA Cup. They need some confidence back, better mentality. And then all of a sudden, that one feels like a must-win, James.
It does, yeah. Yeah, and I think, I just think Jurgen Klopp finds himself in a really awkward position at the moment, because, you know, ideally, you Liverpool don't want to, they really want to avoid another, you know, another bout of negativity going out the FA Cup early. You know, they need to try and get some momentum and some rhythm back ahead of that, you know, huge contest against Manchester United, because, you know, beat Man United, and all that frustration of failing to beat West Brom, Newcastle and Southampton will be washed away, and we'll be talking about Liverpool's title charge being back on track. But I'm expecting Klopp to make a lot of changes for Friday night against Villa, just because I think you look at the way he's treated the FA Cup in recent years. I don't think it's a priority. And I also think, you know, although Liverpool performed poorly and made some really careless mistakes on Monday night at St Mary's, I also think fatigue is an issue, because, you know, one of the elements of having so many players out injured, and then you've got players coming back at the moment who are lacking rhythm, is other personnel have played a ridiculous amount of football in this hectic schedule. And I think they are feeling the effects, which is why I'd be really surprised if we saw, you know, the first choice front three, and you know, I think ideally he'd probably want to give Andy Robertson the night off as well at Villa Park. I think everything has to be geared towards trying to ensure Liverpool are back firing all cylinders for that United game. And you know, if if that means fielding, you know, fringe players and youngsters against Villa, then, you know, I think so be it, because, you know, trying to retain the Premier League title has to come before anything else.
James Pearce live at a service station on the A34. You won't hear that too often. He won't want to be doing it too often. James, thank you very much.
Cheers, Steve.
Thanks to James. This is the Red Agenda. Let's just finish it off with a word about Jerry Marsden. Tributes pouring in for him. In this, last 12 months, we lost Gerard Houllier, Ray Clemens, and of course now Jerry Marsden after a short illness. 78 years old, an icon of the Merseybeat era, and of course such a special anthem with You'll Never Walk Alone. Not just Liverpool fans, clubs like Celtic, Dortmund, Bruges with a special bond to Jerry Marsden. And it's interesting, I mean, Kiva, when you hear it played, I don't suppose you think that often about the man behind it, but this has really brought that to light, hasn't it? And the impact that You'll Never Walk Alone has had on people's lives.
Yeah, massively. I mean, I was, you know, I think, you know, when he passed away, it was sad news, wasn't it? And, you know, I think you saw that outpouring of emotion from all around the world. And I mean, I weren't really expecting that in a way. He was, because, you know that he's a Liverpool legend. He's a legend of the city. But the outpouring of emotion was like, you know, I'm sure that would have given his family a lot of comfort. It was just lovely to see, you know, from all corners of the world, that song just resonates. We know it's, you know, not his original song, but the rendition of it is, you know, the greatest of all, isn't it? And, you know, as soon as you hear it, I mean, you know, other fans will probably think it's overplayed, but, you know, as soon as you hear that, you feel at home. And I was listening to it play out on the TV and radio, you know, in the day after he passed away. And it's sort of like, it just opened up this sort of new level of emotion for the song. And I didn't think that could even be possible, because, you know, we do find home in those lyrics and that and his voice, don't we? And, you know, he'll forever be, you know, the voice of a match day at Anfield, and, you know, match day Dortmund, Celtic, you know, lots of clubs play it. And, you know, it's just such a special song, I think, which has guided Liverpool through a lot, and it's guided people through a lot themselves and their own families, hasn't it? I think it's always sort of a song you can go back to and think of, and it always just sort of, you know, makes you feel, like I've said there, it'll be the third time I'm saying it, but it does make you feel like home. And, you know, I think with everything going on at the minute in the world, I think, you know, I think we all need a little bit of home, don't we? As much as we're probably seeing too much of home, we need that feeling of togetherness and solidarity. And I think that's a song that sort of, you know, does that for a lot of people. And, you know, I think as well, you know, he wasn't just the singer of You Never Walk Alone. He, you know, Jerry and the Pacemakers were, you know, they were running riot with the Beatles, weren't they? They were, you know, some of the other songs are absolutely fantastic. And you were hearing them play out and thinking, I didn't know that was their song, in the kind of same way when you hear the odd Beatles song and you're like, that's the Beatles. So yeah, no, very sad news. And I think, you know, I think his family will take comfort in the outpouring of emotion, and the, you know, his voice will obviously live forever at Anfield.
Si, I am so glad I went to see Take That at Anfield, because Jerry came out on stage and did a duet with Gary Barlett. Fantastic, because I'd never seen him sing it. And actually, they couldn't get him off stage. He was enjoying the limelight that much. And I think he was one massive smile on his face. He was one of those who clearly loved the moment and clearly loves the football club.
Yeah, I really sort of, you know, a throwback, wasn't he, really, to a different age. He did seem to enjoy the showbiz element to it. I interviewed him once, and it was only over the phone, so you can only tell so much about a person's personality over the phone. But he just had this sort of this natural enthusiasm about everything, really. And the one thing that I picked up from the conversation, I don't think he really truly sort of appreciated just what the song what his voice means to so many people in some ways. I think that's because he was quite a humble person, really, in many ways. You know, I mean, I realise it's an anthem for a lot of people, not just Liverpool fans, but because he's from Liverpool, it obviously means a lot more for Liverpool, I think. And he was just a very humble man, but enjoyed sort of life. He seemed to be very sort of just really excitable and enthusiastic about everything. And I think that's I think he just came across as a real person from Liverpool who sort of wanted to have a good time. So as you said at the start, Steve, I just think it's sort of a lot of the good people seem to be taken away from us at the moment, and it's pretty hard to take, I think.
Oh, lovely to hear from Si today, and of course Kiva as always, and James, thanks for joining us on his way back from Southampton. That was the Red Agenda. Hopefully there's cheerier things to talk about in the weeks to come. Thanks for listening. The pod will be back in a week's time.